540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Millions of Americans are dealing with dangerous heat or severe thunderstorms. The Weather Channel meteorologist Chris Bruin is tracking it.
The length of heat that we've been dealing with, not just in the desert southwest, but across Texas, has been notable. Not only record-breaking, but the longevity that's lasted. And we're also going to see it expand towards the north as our ridge of high pressure continues to hang its grip over the desert southwest and the southern plains.
CBS's Carter Evans in Palm Springs, California.
The temperature reading of the blacktop right now is at 165.
Battalion Chief Greg Lyle says with street temperatures that high, many calls can end up with a trip to the burn unit.
When something as simple as just a traffic accident, a bicycle get hit by a car, and the individual falls on the street, we're dealing with an injury that was caused and then also now possibly burns.
A smooth voice is silenced.
It had to be you.
Tony Bennett has died at age 96 after a battle with Alzheimer's disease. Joe Levy on Bennett's legacy.
Tony Bennett is one of the greatest singers of American song. A great interpreter, someone who could bring so much to both the melody and the story of the lyrics of the great American songbook, but also someone who was a star for generation after generation.
Alabama lawmakers in the Republican-dominated House and Senate refused to create a second majority black congressional district, instead passing a plan that would increase the percentage of black voters in the state's second district, which the GOP governor signed. The decision could defy an order from the U.S. Supreme Court. A trial date is set for the classified records criminal case of former President Trump. CBS's Scott McFarlane.
Judge Eileen Cannon, a Florida federal judge who was a 2020 appointee of former President Trump, has set the trial date for May 20, 2024. And there will be some key hearings between now and then. And one of them, a classified information procedures hearing, is set for January 16th, the day after the Iowa caucuses.
And a teenage girl from San Antonio uses quick thinking to alert people in Southern California that she wasn't where she was supposed to be.
61-year-old Steven Sablon is charged with kidnapping after he was arrested in Long Beach, California earlier this month. He's accused of sexually assaulting and kidnapping a 13-year-old girl from San Antonio, ordering her into his car at gunpoint after seeing her at a bus stop. A criminal complaint says he drove her to California where he left the car to wash their clothes in a laundromat. Investigators say that's where people saw her holding up a sign that said, "Help me," and called police. The teen was placed in the custody of Children and Family Services.
That's CBS's Wendy Gillette. This is CBS.
Find great hires fast with Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring solution makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Local radio for your community. Civic Media, broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Briggs & Stratton needs a new boss. Jimmy Koska has the story.
The Milwaukee Business Journal reports Steve Andrews, CEO since the company emerged from bankruptcy 3 years ago, has left the company for personal reasons. The Wauwatosa-based company has appointed Christina Cerniglius as the interim CEO until a permanent replacement is appointed. Under Andrews' leadership, Briggs & Stratton diversified its product lines and underwent layoffs and production shutdowns in certain areas.
There are two new leaders of a Milwaukee commission that doesn't have the same power it once had. Two members of the Police and Fire Commission resigned yesterday in protest of the state's new shared revenue law, which curtails the FPC's authority to set policies and standards for the police and fire departments. The commission appointed Miriam Horwitz as the new chair and Dana World Patterson as the vice chair. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup.
Yes, that's awesome.
Starting at 6 AM, Up North News, 8 to 10, The Earl Ingram Show. Mondays, 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crute. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show. On 540 AM. WAUK.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight.
The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
A no-holds-barred political conversation. That's Matt Flynn Direct.
Anybody running against Trump, if he calls them a nasty name, they should hit him back twice as hard. This is not the Marcus of Queensbury gentleman's rules anymore. In politics, certainly not in the Republican Party. Hit him hard.
Matt Flynn Direct, weekday afternoons from 3 until 4 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app. Log on civicmedia.us.
Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Republicans want to start World War III. That's right. Come September 30th, we're looking towards another government shutdown because Republicans in the House are saying, you know what? We didn't get the pound of flesh we wanted. We didn't get the pain and the misery. We didn't get the recession that we were hoping for. So you've got, according to Axios, you've got a Republican lawmaker saying, hey, this spending fight's going to be World War III. We're going nuclear. And understand, they need it. They need this. They need a recession. The only chance they've got in 2024 is to cause mass pain and suffering and struggle and recession. It has to happen. That's when you do when you're running for office and you do your four boxes, you know, what you're going to say about yourself, what you're going to say about your opponent, what your opponent's going to say about you and all of that. When you fill that out in all four of those boxes, Republicans need recession. That's basically what it is. Number one, we need a recession. We need the economy to tank because guess what? It's doing well. Jobs are up, wages going up, inflation going down. And that's why today when President Biden tweeted out, remember when the experts said that to get inflation under control, we needed to lower wages and drive up unemployment? He said, I never bought that. Instead, I focused on getting more Americans into the workforce, fixing our broken supply chains, and lowering costs, and it's working. Yeah, it is. It's working. And that's got Republicans losing their ever-loving, flipping minds. And they need chaos. They need a recession. They need fear. Which is why we're seeing all this other craziness. Why we're seeing all the rewrite of history in Florida. While we're seeing all of the, well, the culture war stuff. The stuff that's going to keep us pitted against each other. And throwing bombs at each other from the sidewalks. Now, today, the big story, obviously, the president got together with seven of the big tech companies, Amazon, Google, Inflection, Meta, Microsoft, OpenAI, and Anthropic. I've never heard of them, but I guess they're a big one, too. And they've come to some voluntary guidelines for AI. Now, the administration says that they've secured commitments on responsible innovation. And I got to be honest, as much as I love Joe, I don't know, responsible innovation out of the tech gurus, not so on board. But here's the thing. Congress
isn't going to do its job. Congress is so far out of this that this is the best we're going to do. Biden coming together and saying, hey, there's got to be some minimal things. Now, understand, the tech companies, I don't trust any agreement that's voluntary. Oh, sure. Yeah, we'll do that. Bet on that. Checks in the mail. And I certainly don't trust tech companies when they say they'll voluntarily do something. But this is a success, I got to say. It's a first baby step. I mean, very, very small baby. A very small baby step. But as I said, you know, Congress has got to get their heads out of their, you know, and get ahead of this before the genie's completely out of the bottle and we're completely screwed when AI takes over. Because understand, there's going to be a tsunami of job loss. This technology, along with robotics and automation and all that, going to replace us in large numbers. And this is why you're seeing in union contracts them fighting against the use of AI, them fighting against the use of automation, because they know that once corporate America goes, hey, we can flip the switch and have a robot or a computer or artificial software come out and say, you know what, we can work 24/7, 365, don't need vacations, don't need days off, certainly don't take sick time. And there's a lot of problems with the AI revolution that we should be concerned with. The fact that, you know, it's who feeds the system decides what comes out. You know, this is the scary part of this for me is, because look, I'm looking at what they're doing in places like Florida, rewriting history. The people who have always rewritten history have always done it to benefit themselves at the expense of whoever else, whatever the loser was. Their history is never told. AI is going to be the same thing. The person who writes the code, the person who inputs all of the information that AI chooses from, that's power. So this idea that we could basically train this system to continue to have all the biases and all of the discrimination that, you know, that made America great, that should be frightening. And the fact that there isn't any real transparency in this system, that we don't know how the machinery works. I mean, these wonderful algorithms that keep feeding me crap on my social media page. Understand, social media is just, that's like a little tidbit of what the future is going to be. So if you're not thrilled with what you get from your social media accounts, the kind of garbage that's sent to you constantly, imagine when they take over. And then start thinking about the privacy problems and the idea of the security problems. The idea of us having any personal privacy is long gone. Some argue I'm already behind in saying that it's gone. I like to hold on to the illusion that we still have some bit of privacy, some bit of ourselves left. But once this AI takes over, once this brave new world comes around, there's none of that. And you know, look, at the end of this, as we talked yesterday with Raphael, who's on strike with the Writers Guild, the idea that human creativity and the idea of the idea of any personal touch to something is over. And then, you know, look, all of the economic problems that come with it, massive inequality. You know, I've seen some of the people on social media going, you know, this is going to be the greatest year. I think his name's Gary Vee. I've seen Gary Vee going, yo, AI is going to create millionaires, lots of them. We're going to have millionaires created because of this. And you go, yeah, duh. Didn't need to be a genius to figure that one out, Gary. Because in every transition, there are winners, handful of winners, and all of the rest of the people, losers, the working people who are going to take it on the chin. But this is even worse because this just isn't a technological change that's going to, you know, make, you know, massive productive improvements. It's going to. And those productive improvements going to the handful that they're going to put it in their pocket and screw over working people. It's more than that. I mean, it's everything we do. It's our entire democratic process. I mean, we're in a moment right now where confirmation bias is all around us. We're in a moment right now where you can be in your camps, where you got your bubble and I only want Fox News, or I only want, you know, whatever is on the left. I don't know. Is there anything on the left? I guess the CNN was blamed for being left for a while. I guess MSNBC, they're kind of a corporate left, maybe. There's no Fox News for the left. There really isn't. And this is what we're going to get in the future. All you're going to get is the corporate side of things. All you're going to get is what the people who control the systems and the algorithms feed into it. So the fact that you're going to have billionaires made out of this, you're going to have, you know, wealthy people, really wealthy people made out of this. The vast majority of us, we're screwed. Because not only are we not going to benefit from the financial part of it, because the handful of people who run these big tech companies are going to get it, but also the way for us to fight back will be rigged. Because, well, where do we get our news and information? Social media. Who runs this? Big tech. So I look at the measures that President Biden negotiated, the administration negotiated, and I'm going, okay, these are, you know, kind of, this is what the tech industry said, you know, we're willing to give you as a voluntary commitment. But I really have no faith that they're gonna hold to this for long. But these are some of the things that they wanted to do. And one of the big ones is using watermarks on audio and visual content so that we, the dim, we can say, oh yeah, that's an AI product. So when Donald Trump, you know, they have a video of him mouthing and saying the words that he tweeted, you go, no, that's not him saying that. That's, he may have tweeted it, but that's not him actually saying it. Because there are already deep fakes out there where people are going, I didn't say that. You go, no, you didn't. And that should scare you. So the watermarks, that's a good idea. They also want to allow independent experts to push these models into bad behavior and process something known as red teaming. So they're going to try and booger up the system so they can figure out how to fix it. Okay, that's one thing. Sharing trust and safety information with government agencies and other companies. Yeah, that's going to happen. And the right will lose their mind. Because, oh, the government's working with the tech companies. And I'm a little weirded out by that. Investing in cybersecurity measures. We certainly need to do that. Encouraging third parties to uncover security vulnerabilities. Yeah, they're going to be third, fourth, fifth, sixth, foreign countries, people who hate us. There's going to be a lot of that. And understand, once they get the ability to hack into our AI systems, it's amazing how fast the common sense of the country has changed. You know, as somebody who's a little bit older, you got people go, was it like this when you were younger? And the answer is no, it was never like this. You know, 30 years ago, the me of then coming to now would be, well, canceled immediately, but enraged at what we've become. So we're in this space. Also reporting societal risks, such as inappropriate uses and biases. Yeah, that's probably not going to happen. Prioritizing research on AI's societal risks. Yeah, we should be doing that. And our government should be doing that as a matter of course. And using the most cutting AI system known as frontier modeling to solve society's greatest problems. You know what society's greatest problems are right now? The people behind AI. That's what frightens me. The people who have the control of what is going to be the most powerful tool in the history of humanity to change hearts and minds, to get people to groupthink. Because again, you know, the people who pull the strings, it's amazing how many people I talk to who don't realize that the social media accounts they have, that there's an algorithm that feeds them what the algorithm thinks they want to see. And they wonder why all they see is craziness like they believe.
There's never anything to challenge that, because it's all about keeping your eyes on social media. It's all about getting you to look at Instagram or Facebook or whatever. It's all about keeping you hooked. It's all about giving you that drug that you crave and the outrage that you need. They're masters at this. So the fact that Biden got a little bit of something, you know, good on Biden for doing this. But again, I don't trust any voluntary agreement, especially with tech companies. This is why Congress has got to regulate. I know regulation is a horrible idea in Republican circles, but you're going to have to come around to it, because this, my friends, this could be the end of this wonderful thing we call representative democracy. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Also, give us a call, 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Bob Casey, senator from my state of Pennsylvania, running for re-election, and hopefully he is re-elected easily, because I think he's one of the really good guys in the Senate. He's got a new piece of legislation that he's going to be moving. It's called the No Robot Bosses Act. And you go, well, it's about damn time. Because we've been talking about places like Amazon, who, you know, AI already is watching everything they do. People are being fired by computer, by text, because everything they do is monitored by a handheld unit. If you're not touching a box, so every couple of seconds, it's barking at you, asking you, what are you doing? Where are you going? Why aren't you doing this? And you know, constant surveillance, constantly under the watchful eye of the computer. And now Casey has this No Robot Bosses Act, which, what he says right now, there's nothing stopping a corporation from using artificial intelligence to hire, manage, or even fire workers without involvement of a human being. He goes on to say, as robot bosses become more prevalent in the workplace, we have an obligation to protect working families from the dangers of employers misusing and abusing the novel technologies. And his legislation would ban employers from relying exclusively on automated decisions, these systems to make employment decisions. Now, my problem is with the wording, relying exclusively. How much is exclusively? All of it? 99% of it? Can we use 98% of what the computer says? Also, it requires periodic testing, such for systems of possible discrimination and bias before they're used in employment decisions. Also requires training for those using the systems, if there are any humans left. Mandate human oversight of the automated decision systems before they are used in employment decisions. Require disclosures of the use of the system. And create the Technology and Worker Protection Division within the Department of Labor. Now, again, I come back to the simple answer in Rick Smith's world. And you all know what that is. If you've listened to this show any longer than 5 minutes, you know what my solution to this is. My solution to this is right now, every working person should join a labor union. Right now, everyone should get a collective bargaining agreement. Right now, everyone should band together with their coworkers, whether you start your own or use an existing union, but fight for a contract that has language in it. You know, these laws, while we're going to pass the potentially, I don't see Republicans coming along. Maybe I'm wrong. But the No Robot Bosses Act, there's always going to be a loophole because, as it says in the first thing I read, employers aren't going to be able to use exclusively the information. Not, they can't use exclusively, but 99.94%. That's not exclusive. I mean, this is how bad it can get. So for me, the idea that you have representation in the workplace and ability to sit down and say, "Hey, this is how this is being used," or how you're not going to use it. At some point, we have to be the ones who say no. We have to be the ones who say, you know what, you know, we've got to band together and fight back. Literally fighting the machine. Because if we do nothing in this moment, and understand, I'm not seeing the kind of outrage that I think we should be seeing. I'm not hearing the kind of concern that I think we should be seeing. I see the Writers Guild and the Screen Actors. I see them fighting for their future. The idea that, I mean, think about this for a second. When I found out that the studios were going, you know, we're going to pay extras to come in and we'll pay them one time, $100 a day or whatever it is. And then we're going to take their image and their likeness and we're going to use it forever. Forever. We'll never have to pay an extra again. All those people who were eking out an existence in Hollywood trying to be actors or writers or whatever, their livelihood is over once that happens. Because a lot of people have made ends meet by, well, today I'll go over and I'll play an extra here and I'll pick up a couple of bucks to put food on the table or keep a roof. That's done. And the studios are like, that's great. We can get rid of all these people. We've got their image. We can use it for whatever we want. It's great. AI is fabulous. We won't even need actors in the future. It's all going to be robotics. It's all going to be animation and automation. And that sounds great. Because look, there are a lot of good things that AI can bring us. Look, medically, it should be able to do away with the high cost of healthcare. You know, I get this, you know, me personally, I get an upper respiratory infection almost every year. It's like clockwork, except for the last couple, knock on something. But it's one of those things where, you know, back in the old days when I had a personal doctor, you know, and I had a good relationship with the doctor who he has since retired and sold his practice to a behemoth corporation who's just a number. But I used to call him up and say, "Hey, I got my respiratory infection again." He goes, "Okay, I'll just write you a script. Just go pick it up. I know your problem. You don't have to come in. You don't have to." And he wouldn't charge me. Wouldn't charge my insurance. It was just, "Hey, I know what it is." You know, I could call up to one of the AI doctors and go, "You know, here's my symptoms. This is my record. This is, you know," and then we go, "Yeah, you got an upper respiratory infection. Bang, here's a prescription." There are things that we can do. You could go in, "Hey, you know, I got a cold," or whatever. That low level, you know, an instant kind of healthcare stuff that could be all done by AI and could be helpful for doctors in not being bogged down by the little stuff that we're now having PAs or other people do. That could be something helpful. Now, what are you going to do with all those people who are potentially down the road going to lose their jobs? I'm not so worried about that right now because we don't have enough of them. This is where AI can be helpful. This is where it can fill a gap. But here's the problem. You know, once we start down this road, once that ball starts rolling, you don't stop it. And this is where, again, Congress has got their heads so far up the entertainment wagons behind that I don't know enough people are doing this. For those people who say, "Well, you know, Democrats are no different than Republicans." No, Democrats are actually trying to get some of this stuff done. In fact, you know, there's also, I think it was Cory Booker and Bob Casey, who came forth with the Exploitative Workplace Surveillance and Technologies Task Force Act. That would create a task force to look into surveillance in the workplace. Because should you be monitored every second you're at work? Should everything you do be, and do you have the right to say no? Not today, you don't. I want to hear your thoughts. Is this something that's concerning to you? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'll take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1877. That was the day some of the worst violence of the Great Railroad Strike erupted in Pittsburgh. The strike started days earlier. It's contested as to whether it began in Martinsburg, West Virginia, or Baltimore, Maryland. The strike spread rapidly along the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad to New York State, Pennsylvania, and throughout the Midwest. At its height, the Great Railroad Strike involved well over 100,000 workers. The strike began on the Pennsylvania Railroad on the 19th. Management repeatedly tried to move trains through the yards and was confronted by angry strikers. Pennsylvania guardsmen were called out. The strikers presented the railroad with their demands. They wanted an end to double-engine trains that required fewer workers, wages reinstated, reinstatement for their fired co-workers, and an end to pay grades. Local militia sided with the strikers and refused to show for duty. When thousands of strikers gathered at the depot, the Pennsylvania National Guard moved unsuccessfully to disperse them. Then they fired on the strikers, killing 20 and wounding 29. The strikers were infuriated by the deadly aggression and drove guardsmen into a nearby railroad roundhouse. Word spread quickly throughout the city of the massacre, launching a virtual general strike. Workers began seizing arms wherever they could find them. They set fires to dozens of railroad buildings, burned down the Union Depot, destroyed over 100 locomotives, and more than 1,000 freight and passenger cars. The next day, guardsmen shot their way out of the roundhouse, killing 20 more as they were chased from the city. A total of 3,000 federal troops would be necessary to quell strikers' fury by month's end. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Unfortunately, it's 1984 again in America, not the year, the book. George Orwell's classic novel tells of a far-right totalitarian clique that uses newspeak and doublethink to impose their rigid anti-democratic doctrine on society. Their regime held power through mind control. They had a ministry of truth for perverting language and manipulating facts, while their thought police enforced ideological purity and suppressed dissent. 39 years later, here comes a clique of theocratic extremists in our country, using Orwellian manipulation in its crusade to take control over every woman's personal reproductive rights. Having seized the Supreme Court and practically the entire Republican Party, these present-day autocrats are now demanding that state and national lawmakers enforce the group's ultimate dictate, a total ban on abortions, even in cases of rape and incest. To their amazement, however, the great majority of Americans, even Republicans, think abortion ought to be generally available, with each woman deciding what's best for her. Moreover, the idea of Big Brother imposing a federal ban is massively unpopular. No problem, say today's Orwellian news speakers. We'll just ban the word ban from our PR campaigns. Thus, their harsh abortion ban has magically morphed linguistically into, quote, a pro-life plan. There. Feel better? The abortion truth twisters are even plotting to ban reporters from using the word, claiming that it will be considered proof of political bias. Sure enough, rather than risk right-wing fury, some scaredy-cat reporters are already caving in, meekly describing bans as, quote, restrictions on procedures. How nice, a kinder, gentler tyranny. This is Jim Hightower saying, to keep up with today's Orwellian thought police, connect with Jessica Valenti's diligent tracking of anti-abortion trickery at jessica.substack.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, do you remember, and this hasn't been long ago, remember when Republicans said that, you know, when Roe was overturned, that they weren't going to put any women in jail? That wasn't going to happen. We would never do that. We're just about protecting the baby. We would never go after contraception. We would never. It's kind of like when they do that. They did that thing on back on the inauguration day when Biden accused them of going after Social Security, and they had a complete meltdown. Who, us? We would never do that. And the reason I point this out is right now a teenager in Nebraska who used the abortion pill to terminate her pregnancy, she was sentenced yesterday to 90 days in jail after she pled guilty earlier this year to illegally concealing the remains. And this is one of those things where you go, if we're in a world where it's safe and legal, there's nothing here. Now, what's interesting to me is the girl, she's going to jail for 90 days. The kid, the boy that got her pregnant, because I'm sure this was not an immaculate conception, he got nothing. And that's what I find interesting about all of this. We're punishing, again, we're going to punish women, but we're never going to go after the men. No. And look, I'm living proof of that. I don't even know my father's name, and nor do I want to. But, you know, my mother at 16 was, here he is, and there I was. And we struggled mightily for years until she passed, because there wasn't a breadwinner. And the sperm donor father of mine, off doing who knows what, wherever, and you know, living the high life, not responsible. And this is one of those moments where I go, you know, if we're going to come down on women and say, you have to have this child, you have to, don't we have to come down on the men as well? And understand, this is what this is. And I was having this conversation with my producer today, and he said, you know, the reality is, you know, people should just stop having sex. And I go, yeah, that's what conservatives want. This is the step to getting us to Christian Sharia law. This is the step to getting us to the morality police beating people up for living life and being a teenage girl who makes a mistake. This is the punishment. And then to be able to use her in society as the shame. That's what this is about. It's about much more than just, you did a bad thing. You had sex. No, this is about punishment and about using this as an example. Now, what's interesting to me, this is coming from the people who tell us they believe in smaller, less intrusive government. You remember Reagan? Reagan was the master at bashing big government. You know, government programs, the problem. You know, it's never the solution. But yet, government grew massively under his watchful eye. It grew bigger, bigger, and more invasive, while simultaneously he's saying, no, we want smaller, less intrusive government. Quite a sleight of hand. And look, Republicans are doing the same thing today. Big government conservatives want to control your life. That's simple. They want to control your morality. They want to control what you do in the confines of your four walls, while making sure that the rich people don't pay taxes. And this is, as I said, remember when Republicans said that they weren't going to do this kind of stuff? Well, they are. And what's infuriating to me is I don't see I think there should be massive outrage. Now, I think this girl, when she gets out of jail, spending the next 90 days in jail, when she gets out, I think she's probably going to get a book deal. I think she's going to be the face of hopefully a movement that pushes back against this and says, look, you know, I was in this horrible situation. I hope there are talk shows out there. I will have her on this show if we can get her. Because I don't want that to be my daughter. I don't want that to be your daughter. But This is what big GOP government does to little girls. All while talking about, you know, we care about the, you know, we care about the children. And the weird thing to me is, and this is the thing that's so frustrating. Every day, we keep moving toward what is the movie Idiocracy. If you haven't seen Idiocracy, by all means do, especially the first 5 minutes. The first 5 minutes are brilliant. Because basically, the first 5 minutes tells you how we ended up in the situation we're in. All the smart people were saying, no, now's not the right time to have kids. You know, stock market, you know, things are going wrong. There's war going on. We should hold off. While the dumb people are reproducing like rabbits. And, you know, I love hearing my conservative friends say, oh, you're pushing for white replacement theory. No, no, it has nothing to do with color. We are pushing smart people out. The dim are reproducing at dangerously high rates, which is how we end up with Marjorie Trainwreck Greene and how we end up with Lauren Boebert and the rest of the cavalcade of crazy. But my goodness, every day we keep moving towards what is Idiocracy. And we never hold these people accountable because, again, we have our confirmation bias. We got our Facebook page. We're all Facebook warriors in our little bubble. The question is what happens? What happens down the road when we get what we fear? And we fear on both sides. Look, I fear big conservative government. I fear fascistic Ron DeSantis, Donald Trump, big GOP government. The kind that's going to come into your bedroom with the morality police, the kind that's going to follow your daughter's menstrual cycle, the kind that's going to drown immigrant children in rivers. I fear that big government. Now, I've got conservatives who fear, you know, big taxation, you know, tax and spend liberals. What happens when all that goes away? You know, as was explained to me years ago, you want to have loud debate. You want the right and the left to go at each other. You want, you know, the red hats and the blue hats to have equal say and equal voice at equal volume so they can hash out and fight over and come to the best policy. We're no longer there. The right has the megaphone. They've got the main power. They've got so much power. Their messaging machine is so much more powerful because all of the social media platforms are feeding what the right wants because they're paying for it. Look, corporate America doesn't care about democracy. They don't care about good governance. They care about profits. They care about lining their pockets. So the people who are paying them the most, they're the ones whose message is getting out. And the weird thing is perfect example. My favorite quote today was from Ron DeSantis. DeSantis said at a campaign event, if we don't get our act together 25 years from now, school children in this country are going to be forced to learn 37 different pronouns in Mandarin, and we cannot let that happen. I looked it up. I think there are only 6 different pronouns in Mandarin. But, you know, never mind. Facts and accuracy do not play into this frame. But he's the biggest of the big government guys. Again, this is the guy who wants a we're going to take on the woke and we're going to jam things down people's throats. Look at what they're doing at the rewrite that they're doing to history as we speak. Slavery was a good thing. Taught slaves some skills. It's a good thing. They benefited from it. See how wonderful, see how benevolent slave owners were? They were so good. I'm waiting for them to go, you know, Hitler was a martyr and a war hero. You know, he wasn't all bad. I'm waiting for that. Now, the weird thing is this isn't new. This is what authoritarians do. They write their most favorable history. We're rewriting history to make us feel good. And anything that would be of a factual basis, we should do away with. Now, look, I'm someone who says, look, I think we should learn Florida's version of history. and then we should learn the actual history, and then we can compare the two, and you can find out where Florida is, well, pushing propaganda. This idea that, slaves did okay. It was good for them. It is ridiculous. Now, understand, this just isn't Florida. See, this is the thing. I'm not giving Ron DeSantis the kind of credit that some would give him. In fact, I don't give him any credit for it other than he knows which conservative groups to steal from. All of this stuff, everything, is coordinated. All of it is focus group tested, think tank approved. Moneyed interests have set up organizations all across this country for decades to dream up bad ideas, to rewrite history. In fact, a lot of the rewritten history comes from Hillsdale College. Now, Hillsdale College is the heart and soul of crazy conservatism right now. They've got a history, a constitutional curriculum that they're flaming around that a lot of constitutional scholars I know are going, that's kind of frightening. But here again, what they're doing is they're giving this stuff away, and they're making sure that people see it. They're making sure that it's in people's pockets, that they can grasp it and understand what the conservative movement has done masterfully. The billionaires who fund them, they don't care about the money. You know, there was the story about Richard Mellon Scaife, and he used to fund the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. And he would spend like $20 million of his own money a year to keep that afloat, because he knew it was a right-wing rag that you had to basically just give away because no one would buy it. But he wanted that in people's, in their view, in their eyeballs, in their ears. It wasn't about making a profit in this world. It was about changing hearts and minds. And this is what the right does masterfully. They take care of their own. You know, the old saying, how do you herd cats? A can of tuna. Well, the right understands this. They fund heavily right-wing media, and they do the work for them. You know, I tell the story all the time that I've gone to a number of right-wing radio rows over the years. I've been doing this 18 years. I've been in some interesting places over those 18 years. We went to CPAC. For instance, you know, this was more than 10 years ago, but we went to CPAC, and you go to these places. They understand how to run a radio row. They understand the importance of it. You know, I remember the first time I went to a right-wing event, and, you know, they had someone come up to me and go, well, how long are you going to record? How long are you going to be here? How many people do you want? And for the hours I said I was going to be there, there was somebody in that chair every 15 minutes for the entire time. And not only did they put someone's behind in there, in that seat, they came with a bio, they came with all of their accomplishments, they came with 10 questions they like to ask, that they like to be asked. They basically did your work for you. So when you sat down, you didn't need to know anything about this person. You just read the thing and go, so, question number one. And you sounded like a genius. Oh, wow, you had a great back and forth. You never met the guy in your life. They understand the political theater that this can be. So when I see, you know, someone like DeSantis, who's taking advantage of that, again, focus group tested, think tank approved, and rewriting Florida's history, he's not doing it. The people the billionaire class pay to come up with these bad ideas, they're the ones doing it. And we seem to be taking it, and we seem to be, if you listen to the mainstream corporate controlled media, we seem to be divided on it. Now, I take great solace in knowing that, and I thank, you know, Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, for pointing this out when we sat down with her in Chicago. The Maniac Moms for Misery, the Moms for Liberty group, they've got like 200,000 members, and those were mostly people who came out of the anti-mask movement. They're the Q people who think there are child molesters around every corner. So you've got these were a ready-made group of insaniacs. On the other side, you've got actual parents who care about their kids in the millions joining groups to save public education. And we had better do it forthright. Because what the right is doing incredibly efficiently is they're going through state houses across this country and passing voucher bills and charter bills and you name it, you know, in the name of school choice, targeting public education. Because they know that if they can take public education, they can kill this experiment. That they can turn this into the good, God-fearing, Christian, white, national kind of country that they believe it should be. And then they can rewrite history however they want. And that should be concerning, because that's when you start making the same mistakes over and over and over again. At least that's my thought. I want to hear yours. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1878. That was the day that a new song was introduced to the U.S. labor movement. Reverend Jesse H. Jones set the lyrics of a poem that had been written by I.G. Blanchard more than a decade earlier. The song was called The 8-Hour Day. The fight for 8 hours had become one of the central causes of labor. In 1850, the average work week was 70 hours. This meant that workers had little time for anything else beside their daily toil. After the Civil War, calls for the 8-hour day gained momentum. It became a movement that united workers from different workplaces and backgrounds. 8-hour leagues were formed in cities across the nation. They hosted talks and rallies to spread the word about the need to shorten the work week. At rallies, protesters waved 8-hour banners. They also sang the song that became their anthem. The first verse boldly began, "We mean to make things over. We are tired of toil for naught, with but bare enough to live upon, and never an hour for thought. We want to feel the sunshine. We want to smell the flowers. We are sure that God has willed it, and we mean to have 8 hours. We're summoning our forces from the shipyard, shop, and mill. 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what we will." The 8-Hour Day song continues to be reimagined today, including this version by Rhythm Fest. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I'm telling you, it's coming. Christian Sharia law is just around the corner. We're gonna turn you into good moral folk, whether you want to or not. And if you're not, jail time coming. It's frightening. It's frightening what these people want. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on one. Alice, how are you?
Totally insane. Aren't you happy?
Yes, I feel that every day. What's on your mind?
What I want, well, a couple of things. Number one, about AI. I guess I'm too old, and I have seen too many movies of when the robots take over.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've always been a bit concerned. First thing in my mind goes, oh, yeah. First it's that, and then we're all getting killed by the robots. Mm-hmm. But the Christian Sharia law, let's go there for just a minute. You know, they tried this before in England under Cromwell. And, you know, all the little Puritans were real kind of happy. And then all of a sudden, though, because Cromwell was a bit more of a fanatic than they were, people weren't real happy when they found out, like, you know, you couldn't celebrate Christmas, and disagreeing with Cromwell would get your head chopped off.
Yeah. And, people, you know, weren't happy when it meant them.
Exactly. And, you know, and the thing is, and I have said this to the local evangelical, so which Christian sect is going to be the one in power? She was like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, you know, you got 1,000 or more Christian sects here. Which one's going to be in power? We're going to have a big war between all of them while they decide who's the boss and what happens when you have a power change. So, you know, this has been going on, and I think I've brought this up before when I've called. You know, this has been going on since the early 70s. And each year they seem to step it up and people get a bit crazier. So your listeners out there that are all for the Christian Sharia law, they might want to sit down and think about, now, is it my version of Christianity that's going to be the one? Or are we going to have to fight all those Protestants and the Baptists and the Calvinists or what have you?
Yep.
So, I don't know, Rick. They're all insane. And that's all I can say. Have a good evening.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. No, I've said for a very long time, the fun and entertainment will be when we finally decide that we are a Christian nation, when we finally put that flag in the ground, then to watch all of the different groups fight each other for supremacy. And profit, of course. I mean, my problem with Religion Incorporated is, you know, how bad they are with money. They always seem to need more. All, you know, George Carlin does a great bit. You know, God is all powerful, omnipotent, but just bad with money. you can create the humanity, raise the sun and the rivers and all do all this stuff, but just bad with money. You know, he's all powerful, can do everything, but you know, just needs a little bit more money. It's a great bit, but sadly true. And, you know, look, I grew up at a time when, you know, the Catholic Church was talking about peace and social justice. But I also remember on Mondays when the phone would ring and the church would be calling going, hey, how come there was no money in the envelope? Poor people, you got to put money in the envelope because had to go to church, you know, every Sunday. And you had to put the envelope in so that they knew you showed up. We didn't have any money. That was there sometimes, but not often. And that phone call came every week. And you go, that just sent, I got to tell you, a sour taste in my mouth. But I know you've got a tithe. And that's great if you have it. And you do what you got to do. But for poor people, I don't know. I'm struggling with that one still. But I do think it's going to be interesting to see where this goes as the different religious groups, which one wins. And I fear it will always be the cruelest of the cruel, because I'm not seeing, and maybe it's just I'm not looking in the right places, but I'm not seeing the religious leaders out there talking about how we're treating people on the border. I'm not seeing enough of, you know, how we treat children in this country. You know, there are movies out right now. There's the Sound of Freedom, and all my conservative friends are going, you got to see it. It's the greatest movie ever. And I'm going, I'm probably not going to. If someone wants to send me a free ticket, I'll go see it, but I'm not paying for it. It's a horrible premise. You know, is there child trafficking going on? Somewhere, I'm sure there is. And it's a scourge, and it should be dealt with. But this idea that, this Christian warrior is going to take on the whole establishment and the U.S. government's bad. And it's selling a narrative that they want their people to buy into. And it's kind of a scary thing. Now you go, but you know, they're righting a wrong, and we should right those wrongs. This is what we do at the ballot box. But that's not how this is playing out. Now, also, you got a couple other movies coming out as well. Oppenheimer's coming out, and I wouldn't mind seeing that. And Barbie. You know, Barbie's coming out. There's a Barbie movie. And all I heard was about the Barbie movie, which is hysterical. Again, we've turned movies, especially Barbie movie, into red hat, blue hat. There should be a pink hat, because all I saw for the trailer was pink. But evidently, Barbie is all going to be about toxic femininity. And I'm not even really quite sure what that means just yet. But I'm sure after Barbie and the indoctrination that's going to come with, you know, little girls wearing pink, I'm sure I will find out. Can you believe we're where we are? And I go back to that. You got to see the movie Idiocracy. Just those first 5 minutes. That's how we got here. That's how we've, it's not about white or black.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.